Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back. CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds, leaky black. Eye on College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike Subs, a sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, and don't forget while you're here, also, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel if you haven't done it already. Let's get into it. Really is, I think you know, only one place to start, and that's somewhere in Middle America where winning streaks and rankings go to die. Final score, Creighton 85, UConn 66. Just one day. After moving to number one in the top 25 in one, but 6 weeks after moving to number one in the AP top 25 poll, the reigning national champions trailed by as many as 21 in Omaha. They lost by 19. They got more or less done to them what they just did to Marquette over the weekend. So the Huskies are now a 3-loss team, just like Purdue, just like Houston. And when you take a fresh look at the bodies of work. What you're going to find if you take a fresh look, unless you're a goofy person. Unless you're one of them goofy people who doesn't know what they're doing, unless you're a goofy fella or gal, if you take a fresh look at the bodies of work, what you're going to find is that Purdue now once again has the sport's best body of work. Welcome back to the top of the top 25 and one, Zach Edey. Good to see you again. Deadleg, I saw you on X, formerly known as Twitter, last night, just before tip-off, predict that Creighton would upset UConn. In the CHI Health Center, what made you so confident to pick against a team that had won 14 games in a row and just over the weekend looked like clearly the best team in the country?
Because good teams take losses on the road against other good teams all the time in college basketball. It wasn't even that outlandish.
What?
Yeah. What? Yeah, I didn't think it was that crazy. Now, UConn did get off to a 7-0 run there. But... And I saw you on CBS Sports Network. I would disagree with your definition of this game. To me, a trap game is good team, bad team, good team, bad team in the middle is trap game. I know what you're saying. They were coming off Marquette, so there was a lot on that. I would not define this as a trap game. I would define this as the back end of like a really tough back-to-backer there. So I don't think like UConn got caught off guard. Also, Creighton was absurd. I mean, Creighton was... Dude... They're shooting last night, and Stephen Ashworth, credit to him, 20 points. We've got the box score up right there. Just an outrageously good performance from Creighton on the whole, going 14 of 28 from three-point range. I mean, they had their best performance of the season, and well-timed there. And to me, I'll get to this kind of more on the back end of the combo, I guess. I wonder if Creighton almost has a three-seed body of work at this point. But the turnaround, Parrish. I mean, when these teams met a few weeks back, 62-48 UConn win. Creighton had 48 in the game. I mean, getting 85 on its home floor, the first win in school history over a top-ranked team. Congrats to Creighton on that. The second time it's ever won against a reigning national champ. I got trivia timed on HQ Spotlight Tuesday on this, and apparently the last time was sometime in the 40s. They didn't even give me the school it happened, but I was like, I'll say it was like UConn in 2015 after they won the title. Not the answer. So congrats to Creighton on that. Connecticut is oddly 0-21 in its last 21 road games against ranked competition. The last time UConn won on the road against a ranked team was in 2014 when it was in the American, and Memphis was the 17th ranked team in the country. And additionally, This was the largest loss, a 19-point loss for the Huskies. This was the largest loss by margin of victory. Trivia time! I wonder if you got this and if they gave it to you in the studio last night. The last time a number one team lost by as many as 19 points, when do you think it was?
First off, I gave it to them in the studio last night.
You did not.
People don't give it to me. I give it to them.
Did you? Okay. Tell the audience.
It was earlier this year.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You lose.
I thought you actually had it.
I was just getting cocky.
The last time a number one ranked team lost by as many as 19 points was UMBC beating Virginia by 20 in the tournament in 2018.
What are you suggesting? Let's stop here. Are you suggesting UConn should have never moved to number one?
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. I'm suggesting.
That's what I was hearing.
Sometimes you get got. By the way, congrats to Greg McDermott. I think this was win number 600. There was a lot of factors in the game, and GP can obviously speak to what a lot of people are tuning in for, and maybe strutting all over the UConn corpse this morning. But
I wouldn't do that.
I thought
that's not my style.
It was a lot of it was Creighton, and in fact. Credit UConn. They got it to 10 with like 4 and change to go in the game. Tristan Newton, if you want a bright spot, I mean, he goes for 27, had 12 boards and played extremely well in this game. Klingon was just okay. You can call that a neutralized situation between him and Kalkbrenner. But overall, Creighton's defense was tremendous. They didn't let Caravan become a factor. They didn't let Stephon Castle, who had 4 fouls, become a factor. And really eliminated UConn's ability to use its bench whatsoever. And that led to just a 3 of 16 3-point display from the Huskies, GP. That was their worst of the season. And so a lot of factors confluencing upon each other there. It's surprising to see the team that's played like the best team in the country this season get completely sideswiped. But you know, sometimes this happens, and a great environment in Omaha. I was just, as I was watching all this on Tuesday night, I was like, man, here we are right now, middle of the season. Like, we're going to get to middle of June and just be aching for college basketball games. Like, you know, stop, take a look around. This is great times right now before we even get to March. It was a fun night, and look at you. All of 48 hours, and then we're back to where we were. Congratulations, sir. You got your Purdue Boilermakers back on top.
Few different things. One, on the trap game thing, you might be right. That might be the wrong term to use. What I was trying to illustrate is they were obviously up and operating at an extremely unusual level over the weekend against Marquette. You would acknowledge that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I was just picking nits there. That's all.
No, I'm agreeing with you. So they had to get up in an unusual way on Saturday. And I mean, they were shot out of a cannon. And I just, to win at Creighton 3 days later, you were going to have to come with that same type of intensity and energy. And it's just hard to do that in back-to-back games. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I gotcha.
On the 0 of 21 against ranked teams on the road.
Yeah.
That streak. How well known is that throughout college basketball? I know it's well known now because it was just everywhere last night. How well known was it, say, last week?
Probably not that well known, but I remembered last season bringing this up on the pod and probably referencing it in a court report once or twice that it had been building that because they took that dip in January and since they joined the Big East, they had not won a road game. And in fact, it had gone back to their early points in the American. So I don't know how well known, but it had been discussed at certain points.
Okay. So we were in studio last night and the incredible research crew, the back row, as we call them, they've got this in the notes, right? And somebody's just reading through the notes and, they go, lost 20 straight. This is before the game.
Yeah.
UConn hadn't beaten a ranked team on the road since 2014. Is that right? And somebody else says, that doesn't sound right. Because it just doesn't. It sounds impossible.
It does. Like two national titles since the last time they won on the road against a ranked team.
They've won 2 national titles. They've had multiple 14-game winning streaks. They've been ranked number one in the country. How? Like, LSU, which is 5-7 in the SEC, be a ranked team on the road this past weekend.
I know.
Okay? This stuff happens all the time. Just accidentally. You don't even mean to do it. Like, yeah. LSU wasn't trying to beat a ranked team on the road this weekend.
I actually think that they were.
I don't think they were.
I'm going to give Matt McMahon's group credit. They're going through it there. I think they were trying to win the game.
I don't think they were. Yeah. I don't think they cared. Okay. I don't think that. I think
congrats they're LSU on somehow making it into the podcast, by the way.
It's the first time we've got to LSU this season. It's good to have them back. Yeah. You know, it's good. It's first time back since Strong Ass Offer. Good to see you. Good to see you. How you been? I don't think they were trying. I think they're more interested in increasing their lottery odds.
Okay.
But they did. They just looked up and it's like, oh wow, I guess we just beat South Carolina at South Carolina. I guess we just beat a ranked team on the road. Anything else we can do that UConn can't do? It's a little bit like once upon a time, Arkansas used to go to the Sweet 16 every year, and then they just never did it for like two decades.
1996, as first reported here on the Ion College Basketball Podcast.
Okay, and that one just like made no sense. Like if you'd have stopped in time and after Arkansas was in back-to-back Final Fours and said, you're never going to the Sweet 16 again for like ever, you'd be like, it doesn't even make any sense. This one is like that in the sense that it doesn't, unless you know it's true, unless if somebody presented it to you, you would say, that can't possibly be true.
It is an oddity. They're going to have another shot because they got Marquette coming up here in a little bit, and we'll see if they can finally pull that one off and get it done. And this is also coming on the heels of UConn on Monday. It's been number one plenty of times before. It had never been a unanimous number one team in the AP Top 25, so this week was the first time. Then promptly it'll probably get booted from that. The poll question right now, by the way, for our live viewers is, who do you, live viewers, think should be number one in the country, or is the number one team? And obviously UConn, Purdue, and Houston is in that conversation. We'll get to the Cougars in just a second. Any other takeaways from the game, or just the doings that happened there on Tuesday night, GP?
Well, the game was the game. Like you said, it's not like they were down 11-2 to start. They were up 7-0 to start. They scored the first three baskets of the game, and it looked like, okay, they're ready. Oh, wow, here they go. And I don't know if you saw the clip, but before the game, you know, we were in studio and it's like, so who you got? And I was like, I guess I'll take UConn. You know, they've been playing at an extremely high level. And then we come back and UConn's down pretty big. And that's where the clip was, where I said, yeah, you know, it looked like a trap game. And Wally Zerbiak is like, well, then why didn't you pick UConn?
Yeah.
And I'm being completely honest. This is exactly why I didn't pick UConn. Because Zoe, God bless her, she's the best.
Zoe runs our social media for CBS Sports College Hoops.
She's a star. Yeah. All right. And the second I say on TV, I think UConn's 14-game winning streak is coming to an end tonight, Zoe's going to clip that. She'll clip it before I even say it.
Yeah.
She somehow knows what I'm going to say.
Right.
And she'll have it clipped before I even say it. And then it's going to be on social media. And then I just was trying to, I'm never playing best case scenario. I'm only playing worst, trying to avoid worst. I'm not shooting for best. I'm just trying to avoid worst. And so, because best would have been like, hey, I tried to tell you idiots for a while, watch what happens tonight. That would have been the best, okay? But I couldn't.
I'll just say that tonight on CBS Sports Network. I don't care about what it is. Just invoke that.
So I was trying to avoid the worst case scenario was me saying, I just think UConn's 14-game winning streak, it comes to an end tonight. And then UConn goes out and jumps to a 21-3 lead at Creighton. Zoe's done clipped it. It's been now I'm back in it. No escalators is on my throat. It's just I couldn't deal with it again. That is genuinely why I didn't pick.
Okay, so you're doing it out of fear of backlash from viewers. Okay,
I'm dealing with
yourself and your convictions, and don't worry about your mentions. How many times do I have to tell you this?
Yeah, I don't have any. I don't have convictions anymore. I used to have them. It didn't work out for me. Feeling strongly about stuff didn't work out for me so well. Hey, I saw this from our buddy Jared Burson. He invented ESPN Stats and Info.
He did not. Go ahead.
He invented it, created it from nothing.
Does not work there anymore, by the way.
No, he owns it. And how about this?
This isn't. I think I know what you're going to say. This is a ridiculous note.
It's what Jared Burson was.
This is the one about the teams in Nebraska. This is
what Jared Burson was made for.
Yeah.
This is why. I don't know if you believe in God or not, but if you do, this is why God created Jared Burson for stuff like this. He said Creighton beat number one UConn by 19 last night. Nebraska beat number one Purdue by 16 on January 9th. And it is the first time ever that two different schools from the same state beat the number one team by 15 plus points in the same season. Nebraska, the home of college basketball. Put it on a license plate.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Nebraska, oh, where number one teams go to die.
As you rebuilt your top 25 and one overnight, I pointed out at the time it happened, this is true, now Wisconsin's there as well. Most quad one and quad two combined victories in the country as of this morning. Purdue's got 15, UConn's got 13. Sitting there in third place is two teams that won on Tuesday. Creighton and Wisconsin both have 12 apiece. GP, does Creighton have a three-seed resume at this point? Or are they still maybe sitting there as potentially the best four-seed on the board, in your opinion?
I jumped them up to number 9 in the top 25 and one. If you take a fresh look at their resume, that's where I landed with them.
Nine
equates to a three-seed. Dead leg. We're finally seeing eye to eye on this stuff.
You're finally thinking that Creighton's a good team after doubting this team for like the first 2.5 months of the season. So
they gave me reason.
I quote Gary Parrish: "Is Creighton even any good?"
Well, it's a reasonable question to ask sometimes, but not last night. And you're exactly right about the wins inside the first two quarters. All of these teams. So there's really right now, let's just bottom line this, then we can take it wherever you want to take it. There's really three teams right now that could reasonably be ranked number one. And
I agree.
I don't think you're stupid if you rank any of these teams number one: Purdue, UConn, or Houston. You can do any of them. All right. If you want to say, "Hey, I don't care. I just think I ain't seen nobody better than what UConn did to Marquette." UConn's the number one team in the country. Fine with me. Hey, Purdue does have the best body of work. That's what the selection committee would tell you this morning. That's what they would tell you this morning. Fine with me. Or hey, Houston's got the strongest computer numbers. I'm sorry they haven't won as many games in the first two quadrants as these other teams, but it's only because of a lack of quadrant two opportunities. They're equal with them in quadrant one. They've got the strongest computer numbers. I'm putting Houston number one. Fine with me. It's totally reasonable to put any of them one or to put them in any order. But those are your one, twos, and threes. And now we can debate four if you want to. But those are your one, two, threes. And I do think the major difference right now isn't necessarily the loss column. Because we can get in there and say, yeah, but I think, you know, one of UConn's losses is at Kansas. Another one's at Creighton. Those are better losses than the other team. I'm not disagreeing with you. If you want to get in there and argue that UConn's got the best losses of those three teams, I concede the point. But they all do have nothing but quadrant one losses. They're different, but they have nothing but quadrant one losses. So then I'm going to look at the wins. When you got the same number of losses and they're all in the same place, the same quadrant, I'll look at the wins. And right now, Purdue has 7 wins against teams ranked in the top 25 of the net. UConn has 4. Houston has 3. That's the determining factor for me right now. That's why I would insist that Purdue's got the best body of work right now. They have 3 more wins over top 25 net teams than UConn and 4 more than Houston.
Live poll right now has UConn, who was your number one team? UConn 34% is first. Houston 1 percentage point behind, 33%. Purdue 26%. Nada put other in there. There's no other Nada. So I'm divvying up that 7% to the others. And that's actually a pretty split even across the board vote there. Houston, let's just talk about them real quick here as before we take a break then, because they're in this conversation. Beat Iowa State on Monday night. Houston is almost at 90 straight days as the number one team in efficiency at KenPom, and a 73-65 win over Iowa State. It's the only time the season Houston won a game at home by single digits. Jamal Shedd is a first-team All-American, folks. At this point, if you had to make a ballot, there's no argument against it. Houston is a one seed. It's a top three team. It might be the best team. It rates as the best team. He had 26 points, 6 assists, and he continues to be tremendous there. So it was 2 nights ago, but since Houston is right there in that conversation with UConn, wanted to at least talk about the Cougs on the top here, because they are not the way they continue to play a style that just looks like an absolute pain in the ass to prepare for. And then to know that you got to go and go deal with this team for 2 hours seems like hell for every single opponent that they have to face. But I love watching UConn play. I love watching Houston play. They have a different kind of style. That's why I love this sport, because different coaches have different philosophies, and the way Houston chooses to approach a game is different from a lot of other teams. And damn, if it doesn't work, man, they are a force. They can be beat, of course. And the offense, if you want to say, well, do I want to trust that offense to win four or five straight games in the big dance? Okay, I'm willing to have that discussion, but it will be an absolute nightmare for any team that needs to beat them from here until the end of the season. And I would, I don't do the power rankings anymore. If I was doing the power rankings right now, I wonder what Cobb will have when he refreshes them on Thursday. I personally, from a power ranking standpoint, I would have Houston number one right now, particularly after getting a good home win against Iowa State and just seeing the way this team has just been relentless. And oh, by the way, not just is it number one GP in KenPom, but its efficiency margin is still pretty comfortable. It plays in the Big 12, so it could take some L's, and it's not guaranteed to stay there. But if it basically plays to expectation, it will be the number one team in the country still from now until Selection Sunday.
After the game, because this was the ESPN game on Monday night, and it was a fun, I know it wasn't the highest scoring, best offensive game in the history of the sport or even in the history of the day, but it was a competitive, fun basketball team between two undeniable top 10 teams in America. And it leads right into Scott Van Pelt Sports Center, and they go to Kelvin Sampson pretty quickly in the show, you know, back on the court, and it's Scott and Kelvin talking, and it was great. I love it. Like, I love Scott's Sports Center. I love it when, you know, he brings people on, and he's really good at talking to people on camera. And like, he had Dan Hurley on maybe the same night, and Dan was great. That was wonderful. But so he's got Kelvin on, and Kelvin just starts going on and on about Jamal Shedd. And it reminded me of, like, I've had these conversations with Kelvin about Jamal Shedd, Veterans Classic last year, very beginning of last season. Houston played St. Joe's at the Naval Academy. I was on the sideline, CBS Sports Network, and we were at shoot around. And, you know, we're just talking to Kelvin, and, you know, his team's out there, like, getting up free throws, into shoot around. They're just getting up free throws or whatever. And, you know, we're chopping it up with Kelvin and sort of like, hey, who have you seen? What do you think of this team? You know, what do you think of that team? You know, have you seen these guys? And we settled on one team that was, hey, they could be really good. They got a couple of one-and-done players, but, you know, we'll see. They're young. And Kelvin sort of got on this little thing about one-and-done players and five-star freshmen. And he's like, listen, you know, I love them. I got one here, Jairus Walker, right? Like, I got one myself, but I'm just telling you, man, he was like, this is the way I remember it. GP, who's the best freshman point guard in the country? And I told him somebody. And he said, you know, just give me Jamal Shedd. I'll just take Jamal Shedd. I know he's 6'1". I know he wasn't heralded coming out of high school. I'll just give me Jamal Shedd every day. You can take your five-star freshman and let's go play. And I've never forgotten that. Because he went on and on from there about his parents. I never heard a coach talk about somebody's parents this much. He's like the mom and dad, just amazing people. And then when he was talking to Scott on Monday night, because it just, again, triggered all these thoughts. He said something along the lines of Jamal Shedd is the type of young man who, if you have a son, you want him to be like him. And is that not the most, just if you, I say, sometimes these things register with me because I have a college age son. Is that not the most, is that the best compliment you could get as a parent, as a young man, that another person who, another adult who has children and grandchildren, and they deal with you every day, and they say, if I had a son, I'd want him to be like you. Isn't that the best thing you could say about somebody?
Yeah, that's good stuff right there. And yeah, he's super impressive. I mean, he's just,
like, what I'm telling you is I don't really know Jamal Shedd.
Yeah.
But everybody who knows him glows about him. I mean, that raves about him. And it reminded me of the viral video from a couple of seasons ago. I had forgotten about this. Somebody put it in our mentions, but there's the game down in Alabama. He's a sophomore. He's the seventh leading scorer on the team. He's just a guy. He's a sophomore. And this is a Houston team that goes on to the Elite Eight, but they lose at Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And I think it was
controversial ending.
Yeah. And I think it was
whatever.
A Houston player. We don't need to drag up stuff, but a Houston player, former Houston player, like takes a garbage can, dumps it over, garbage everywhere. It's a bad look. You shouldn't do that. And Jamal Shedd stops, picks up the garbage can, and starts picking up the garbage and putting it back in the garbage can. He didn't make this mess. It ain't his problem. Nobody's expecting him to fix it. But he sees a mess. He sees something that was done that should not have been done, and he takes it upon himself to fix. I can't even get my own kids to do that with Capri Sun packages in my own house. And Jamal Shedd did that at Alabama. And at the time, it was just a viral video, just something we watched, and we went, oh, man, what an impressive young man. And then we all moved on because there was another viral video 10 minutes later. But looking back at it with context, that was seems to be a great representation of who that young man is, of the young man his parents raised. And to see him go from somebody who graduated high school 13 miles from Texas's campus, but was never seriously recruited by Texas, and now might be on the verge of being a first team All-American after completing a season sweep of Texas. It's awesome stuff. And I'm with you. You know, we don't have to put together All-American ballots for a little while. But if you're putting one together right now, you probably need to have Jamal Shedd on your first team.
Yeah, 13.3 points, 5.8 assists, 3.9 rebounds, 2.3 steals, and getting it done for Houston. He's their most vital, important player overall, unquestionably. So a good win for the Cougs. And yes, I would I'd have them number one right now. But a nice little start to the week here, GP. We've got a whip around to get to, a lot of results from Tuesday night that we want to spin on here, and we're up against it here because GP's got a show. So Nada, if you wouldn't mind, let's get a quick word from our partners.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deadleg, whip us around.
I didn't know if you were going to say coming out of the break.
Well, I usually do, but then the last time I did and you talked over me, so I was going to leave it on you.
Is that what happened? Okay. I think we were up against it again, so I was trying to move the show along.
All right. Well, then, hey, then go.
Let's go. All right. We'll lead on – this was a Peacock game. Kind of got overlooked a lot on Tuesday night. Iowa 78, Michigan State 71 at the Breslin Center. Iowa trying to just work itself to be in the bubble conversation. Michigan State still in the field, but I don't know, in that 9-10 seed range right now. Iowa was down with like 6 minutes to go, took a 10-0 run, and that was in the first half. And then they kind of never looked back. Ben Cricke had 18 points and 14 rebounds. Really good play out of him. Michigan State just needs to figure it out, GP. Any quick thought? I don't know if you did a hit on this in the studio last night, but this is a weird team that I doubt that I think is going to get to the tournament. I think I'm going to have a hard time talking myself into picking Sparty to be a team to win a game in NCAA tournament just because I haven't seen the consistency.
No, they look like a team that is going to be good enough to get there because they have an all-time great coach and he's going to drag them there somehow. But yeah, they're just wildly unreliable. I'm real disappointed in them. I'm upset with them. I moved them back into the top 25 and won like on Monday.
What are you doing?
I mean, the resume was the resume.
You know what? At certain points, GP, you need to step away from this whole resume thing and be like, is this team actually one of the 25 best teams in the country?
Okay. They were on a 3-game winning streak, including a win over Illinois, and they had moved to 500 in the first two quadrants. It was like, I'm just telling you, as somebody who looks for teams every morning to put at the bottom of the top 25 and one, it measured up fine. It made total sense. Evidence being that I don't believe one person saw it and was like, what are you doing? Because like, based on computer numbers, based on resume, based on the way they'd been playing, it made total sense. And then they went out and did what they did. I'm real disappointed in them.
Yeah, that's that's obviously a letdown situation for Michigan State. Losing at home to Iowa, that is tough. By the way, Fran McCaffrey, if you were curious, he went on record earlier this week, said he would not be retiring. I think he was actually prompted by a local reporter because I had gotten Izzo on the record about that earlier this season. They were playing Michigan State. And so, Fran, I wasn't expecting him to retire, and he's not on the hot seat. They're just kind of, you know, they're whatever this season. But a good win for the Hawkeyes. Michigan State, meanwhile, has a home game awaiting on Sunday against Ohio State. I believe that is in that is a game on CBS. Let's keep it moving here. A couple of ACC results. Virginia, man. I maybe I was like you with Sparty, but, you know, week ago, week and a half ago, Virginia was riding an eight-game winning streak. It was 19-5, 10-3 in the ACC. I was like, look who's back.
That one's on me. I was wrong.
Lost at home to Pitt last Tuesday. Got a 49-47 win over Wake Forest. That was, it's a win. That's all I can say. On Monday night, Virginia loses 75-41 at Virginia Tech. And credit to Mike Young and that team for just getting a win that just has to give this season some sort of meaning. Like, you beat a rival and you evict them out of the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's a problematic one. UVA is still in the field. Meantime, last night, how about Wake Forest? So it's, let me see, make sure this is right. I think Wake Forest, as of this moment, GP, Wake Forest is 21 at KenPom. It's 17-9 overall, 1-5 in quad one, but they destroy Pitt. Credit to John Gassaway for this one. Best performance on offense in ACC play in the KenPom era for Wake Forest, 1.44 points per possession. So that's going back 25 seasons worth of data. That was the best game on offense Wake Forest has played in league play, period. It was the biggest win for Wake Forest over an ACC opponent since Chris Paul was in uniform, GP, back when they beat Florida State by 39 during the 04-05 season. They came out on fire, hit 7 of their first 11 threes. Not in the tournament yet. Virginia's going one way. Wake's potentially going the other. Any quick thoughts on either of those results?
I do think Wake's going to make the NCAA tournament. And it'll be a fabulous story, given everything Steve Forbes has been through throughout the offseason with his wife. It's well documented. Our friend Seth Davis had a really nice story about that. You can find it on his Twitter feed. I'm certain Steve Forbes has also tweeted that. I think they're going to get there. You know, I don't know what the brackets would look like. I don't think Jerry Palm has updated his bracket this morning, but Wake was, you know, this time yesterday among the first teams out of the field, and obviously adding a big win in such a convincing way that improves all of your computer numbers is a step in the right direction. For Virginia, that's just rough. I mean, how do you, like, what? How do you lose by that much to a sub-50 net team? We talked about it in our early Inside College Basketball show last night before our triple header. And I was just sort of asked, like, you know, what do you make of Virginia? And I just said a bunch of facts in a row. It's just like one of those deals where you just say a bunch of true things in a row and people still take issue with it. Like, I just, here's what I said. You tell me what part of this you take issue with.
Okay.
Virginia is now, at the time they were down to 50th in the net. I think because other stuff happened throughout the night, they're 48th in the net. But they are 48th in the net and down to a 10 seed in the tournament, according to Jerry Palm's latest bracket. So I said something along the lines of, you know, Virginia used to be one of the very best programs in the country. But now, you know, you're talking about a terrible offensive team that has lost 2 of 3. And even the one win in between, they only scored 49 points in that game. In this 1-2 stretch, they're shooting like 25% from 3-point range. And Tony Bennett hasn't won an NCAA tournament game since he won the national championship in 2019. They have, you know, we didn't have a tournament in 2020. You might have heard about that. They lost to Ohio in the first round of 2021, didn't make it in 2022, lost to Furman.
Furman.
in the opening round last year. So since Virginia won the national championship in 2019, it's zero NCAA tournament wins, 0-2 in the tournament with losses to Ohio and Furman. These are all just true things. Just like, you know, this is my phone. This is a black thing that holds my phone. This is a pin.
Oh, nice.
This is a pin. This is a pin. Okay. You know, and everything I just said is true things about Virginia. You take any issue with what I said?
No, it's just it's a bumpy state of affairs right now for UVA. But here's the thing about Virginia. Man, they could win their next four games. You're just like, all right, there you go. We're back. So,
oh, sure. And when they do that, you know what I'll say? Oh, wow. They bounced back really nicely from that 34-point loss to Virginia Tech. I'll say that when it's time to say that.
What do you trust more?
And I'll say this when it's time to say this.
What do you trust more, Virginia or Michigan State? I would say Virginia.
Yeah, probably.
I think I'd say Virginia in that
case. But I don't know. I don't trust either of them.
It's an interesting one. Let's keep it moving here. Nova beat Butler 72-62 and they got to have it kind of win for Villanova. Butler's like flirting with that 11 seed territory right now. Nova has a weird resume, but it's in the discussion at least. It came out really well in this one. This was a six. I love the 6:30 tips. I love the 6:30 tips because it staggers and it's good for college hoops viewership. So this was the first one on the board last night. And there were like 13 lead changes in the first 10 minutes of this game. Really, really good stuff. Dixon had 22 points. Didn't miss a foul shot there. It's key for Nova. And we can keep this moving because we are up against it here as usual on Wednesdays with GP's Memphis show coming up. But Nova's got upcoming. It's at UConn. Yikes. Home to Georgetown. Got to win it. And then at Providence, at Seton Hall, home to Creighton. Nova wants to have a tournament case. It's 15-11 right now. It's got to go 3-2 in that stretch, and it's got three road games mixed in there. That's kind of a tall task, but I think it needs to go 3-2 to go into the Big East tournament with a chance to get an at-large bid. We will see on that. Utah State on our network, 68-63 win over San Diego State. The team split the season series, so good on Utah State for going 1-1 against SDSU. It's alone in first place in the Mountain West this morning, GP, and the reason why I was so impressed with this game was that they had just lost by like 20 against Colorado State over the weekend. And to do that, you know, great Osterborg he came along with Danny Sprinkle from Montana State. And he's been tremendous. 17 and change the season per game. He leads the Mountain West in rebounding with more than 9 per game. And for Danny Sprinkle to have taken this job, and he is cruising. Like, I think Utah State's a 5 seed right now, Parrish. He's in my, I'd have like him, Hurley, maybe Lamont Paris, top 3 national. I know you talked about this with Boone. I wasn't on the Friday show. We don't need to rehash that conversation again. I don't know if Sprinkle came up in that convo, but in light of this win and given Utah State's gaudy record, I think he's in the top 3 for National Coach of the Year right now.
I have Utah State on Wednesday morning, 19th in the top 25 and 1. That translates to a 5 seed.
Yeah.
Norlander, we're finally seeing things eye to eye.
Finishing each other's sandwiches.
We're starting to see things eye to eye. What Danny Sprinkle's doing is incredible.
It is. It's too.
Like what are we like? This is a league with likely 6 NCAA tournament teams, and he's in first place, and he wasn't there last year. As I said last night on CBS Sports Network, the coaching carousel spun around, and there was some real big hires made. Rick Pitino, Ed Cooley, Chris Beard. No coach in his first year at a job is doing as well of a job as Danny Sprinkle's doing at Utah State. That's undeniable. I get a little, you know, I roll my eyes when I see other people talk about this stuff because I saw it like as recently as last night. It's like, oh, and Danny Sprinkle's your National Coach of the Year. Well, like, respectfully, no, he's not. He's probably not. I mean, Utah State as
no, but he's like on the he's got to be on the short list, Parrish.
Didn't say that. Didn't say that because that's actually true. Say that.
Are you yelling at me? I'm just
no, not you. Okay, just other people.
What?
I watch.
If you want to get it all out, let it all out, bud.
I see these clips and it like Purdue wins a game and somebody's on Twitter talking about Matt Painter's your coach of the year and then UConn beats the shit out of Marquette and somebody's like, well, Dan Hurley's your national coach of the year and then Utah State beats San Diego. It's like Danny Sprint, that's your same dude saying the same thing. So I'm just like, here's the truth. National Coach of the Year right now, I still think it would be Dan Hurley. I would vote for Dan Hurley right now.
Bold take.
Okay. Okay, I would vote for Dan Hurley.
There is something to that, though, yes.
Okay. But Should Danny Sprinkle be on everybody's list of legitimate candidates for National Coach of the Year? Absolutely. If you're doing a list of three, let's discuss it. If you're doing a list of five, let's discuss it. Is he actually the National Coach of the Year? Probably not right now. Could he get there? Maybe so. Dusty May did last season. I ain't ruling anything out. But either way, that's just me getting caught up on some like.
Yeah, you're getting too caught up on it.
That's me getting caught up on some little stuff.
Yes.
The thing we can all agree on is Rick Pitino is an all-time great. Ed Cooley, I believe, is going to do great things at Georgetown. Chris Beard's reputation as a basketball coach is impeccable. None of them are doing a better job in their first year at their schools than Danny Sprinkle's doing right now at his.
Yeah, they didn't return a player who scored a point last season for Utah State, and that's where they are. That is just incredible stuff there. Keep it out west. St. Mary's late game. I was up. I stayed up to the end there. St. Mary's pulls away, beats San Francisco. It's the last unbeaten team in league play is St. Mary's, and because of this, St. Mary's has gone from a team that, you know, looked like it had very little, I mean, very, very little at large chance. At one point, it was 3-5. It dropped to 8-6 2 days before Christmas with a home loss to Missouri State. Hasn't lost since. Beat San Francisco 70-66 on Tuesday night. I detailed this in Tuesday's court report. Over the past 10 seasons, every year except one has had at least one team run the regular season table. 17-18 was the only year that we didn't have any team not lose a game in league play. But otherwise, we get this almost every year. Sometimes we get it with two or even three teams. St. Mary's is our last chance at this. Remaining on the schedule is San Diego at Pepperdine and the home to Gonzaga. We'll see if the Gales can keep it up, but they are in GP's top 25-1, 22-6 overall, 13-0 in league play. Mitchell Saxon was awesome. He had 20-13 in this game. He was the best player on the floor. St. Mary's is now your leading win streak team in that race because of UConn's loss. UConn had won 14 in a row. So St. Mary's is 13. Colgate has won 12 in a row. It's already locked up the one seed in the Patriot League. And then South Florida has won 11 in a row. Texas Tech beat TCU. A couple of Big 12 results here, GP. Texas Tech beat TCU 82-81. This game, Texas Tech, they never led by more than 4 points in the game, but they won. I wonder if this is now a thing. I noticed it afterward. And it's kind of cool. Grant McCaslin has been inviting the students onto the floor to sing the alma mater or the fight song, whatever. Kind of cool. I've never seen it before. And
do you have to do it after losses too?
I don't know.
I hate that. There is nothing more depressing than watching these losers sing a song after getting beat by 14. I hate that. I would transfer.
You hate it? Why do you care? It's not your school.
I know, but I feel bad for those guys every time. I just know how I would feel if after I lost, somebody said, hey, go sing your stupid song. I'd be like, what are we doing? I hate it. I hate that.
I mean, you take the good with the bad. I don't know, but I thought it's kind of cool. I don't think he's going to get out there into the crowd and be like, hey, get your asses on the floor. I don't care that we just lost by 7 at home. So I think, and you know, the nature is also you're playing at home. You're not going to lose at home all that often. So they split the season series though. Texas Tech did by nature getting this win with TCU. And if you want to assign for why you might want to believe in the Red Raiders, which Grant McCaslin, another first year coach, is doing a pretty good job. He's not that far behind Danny Sprinkle. In fact, from guys in their first seasons in new spots, Texas Tech this year has been able to come back after trailing by 15 against Northern Iowa to win that game, trailing by 12 against Kansas State to win that game, trailing by 17 to win a game against BYU, and now they came back down 10 points with 7 minutes to play against against TCU on Tuesday night. So don't count them out. I think that's actually a really, really good quality to have for Texas Tech. I figure you've got to have the Red Raiders in your top 25-1, right, GP?
You're wrong. That's an incorrect assumption. They're obviously close, and Texas Tech fans will obviously take issue with it. They are 6-7 in the first two quadrants. They are under 500 in the first two quadrants still. I don't have any issue with somebody having Texas Tech on a ballot, but you're not going to see many teams in the top 25-1 that are under 500 in the first two quadrants.
Okay, fair enough. Other Big 12 result, BYU gets it done at home. Like TCU, Texas Tech, these two teams have now split the season series, 78-71, a top 25 matchup. BYU hit at a 1.26 points per possession clip in this game. And strangely enough, I thought this would be a race to 85. It was not. The teams were just efficient, not in a super high tempo game. Baylor was at 1.14 points per possession. Ali Khalifa, he is a joy to watch. 14.7 boards, 7 assists. He is a big man that kind of does it all. He's one of those guys where if you're dialed into the Big 12, you're familiar with him. If you're a BYU fan, if you're them, obviously you're familiar with them. But once BYU starts playing really like even more high profile games and half their games are not freaking ESPN Plus, he's a guy whose game is easy to love because he exudes a real joy. And when I talked with Pope a few months back, he was raving about Khalifa's passing ability. It's obvious there. Good on BYU. Like Texas Tech, it came back from a deficit. Baylor got out to an 8-0 lead in this game. Ultimately, it was 3-point shooting that I think decided this. BYU, 14 to 36 from three. They launch and launch and launch and launch. They're going to be a high. I said this on HQ on Tuesday night. They'll be a high variance team in the tournament because they could get cold and get picked off in the first round, and maybe they land as on the sixth line and they get picked off by an 11. That's certainly possible. Or they find fire and you look up and they're in the Elite Eight because their first three tournament games are shooting 44% from beyond the arc. So just keep an eye on that with BYU. Baylor was just 5 of 20 from 3-point range in this game. Tough outing for them, but not the end of the world there. Last whip around result. I'm done with Texas A&M. I'm officially done. They get swept by Arkansas. They lose 78-71. Arkansas, obviously, in the midst of just a really bad season. And it's a weird one for Buzz Williams' crew. I thought they were actually going to make a statement here because they were in some bracket projections going into this game. To me, they do not have a tournament case right now. Not that they're like, you know, completely out of the discussion. I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't have them in the field. And I've just seen this team, like, just toss away too many chances. We get a team or two like this every year, and I'm officially done with A&M. I just they're super frustrating, super inconsistent. And if, for example, and this would actually be unfortunate for Buzz Williams' group because they got left out as a surprising team a couple years ago, if we got to a situation where A&M basically keeps us up and is like right there on the edge, GP, but Indiana State beats Drake in the MVC title game, and Drake has like give me Drake over an A&M, and I think a lot of people would side with that kind of that thought and that thinking.
I'm real disappointed in them.
Yeah, okay. Like Michigan State.
A lot like Michigan State. They have 5 quadrant three losses.
It's
5. Like nobody else in the top 80 of them.
That's disqualifying. Like you can't.
Yeah. I think it changed overnight. I think it's 4. I should be right. Okay. I think it's 4
even
now.
4. We're not into March and they have 4.
Nobody else in the top 80 of the net has 4. All
I
right.
I think only Villanova, which has been up and down, has 3. So right. Yeah.
Like 4 is a big number. So I'm real disappointed in them.
Is that all you got for me?
Yeah.
All right. Well, since that's all you got here, I might as well just throw it again. Nada, let's get a word from the partners.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
All right, Deadleg, you want to look ahead to the next two nights?
I yes, I do. Go ahead.
No, you got? I say there's something on the tip of your tongue.
I wanted to congratulate Nada on his nuptials. He missed the past couple of shows.
Thought you were going to congratulate me on something.
He got married over the weekend, and I wanted to at least give him some love and attention for that. Nada, go ahead, turn on the mic.
Turn on your mic.
Turn on the mic, man. And yeah, you got I don't know, 30 seconds to tell us about your wedding.
No, basically, the wedding was really. The wedding was great. Almost had a fight at the wedding. We'll talk about that off air.
Yeah, no, please, no. Let's talk about it on air.
No.
Who almost got into a fight? I bet it was your uncle.
I can't reveal the name.
It was your uncle and the bride's dad.
I wish it wasn't that.
It was the father of the bride and your cousin.
Nope, we're not. You have to go.
You brought it up. You mentioned it.
I'll bring it up off air. I'll tell you guys.
I don't think I've ever even been to a wedding where there was almost a fight. So I can't even imagine what leads to this.
Alcohol. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. Oh, buddy, I've been to places where alcohol almost led to fights.
I'm not going to get too into the details, but I have been to one wedding where there was a very near brawl in the post-wedding, like get together back at the hotel. And then I've been to a wedding with an extremely awkward situation where it had nothing to do with the people getting married, but people attending the same wedding who were previously involved romantically with other people. And so you don't really keep those people out of your life after the, like, I've been in a couple of awkward scenes, but even that did not nearly come to blows there, but very interesting. Any other good stuff? How glowing was your bride? How amazing was your day, Nada?
It was like a great day, lovely day, except for that one little thing. It was a great day. Bride is incredibly happy. So that's all that matters at this point.
It is all that matters. It is all that matters.
Well, congratulations, buddy. And yes, Nada had not been producing the past two shows. I was out on the road on Friday. We don't need to go down this rabbit hole. But apparently, the Friday show was a little bit of an adventure to get off the runway, but you and KB got it done. Nada, we're thrilled to have you back here. Congratulations on your nuptials. Congrats to you and your bride. And I know you've got a honeymoon coming later this year. We appreciate you, and that's really, really good stuff. I know Parrish is privately extremely pissed that he was not invited to the wedding. We'll deal with that off air.
I thought you were like, I want to offer congratulations, and I thought you were going to congratulate me about something, and then it hurt my feelings a little bit when you skipped me and went straight to Nada.
Well, the man got married.
I got married one time too.
True story here. Invited Parrish to my wedding. He said no. So good times.
I did. I had to work.
Yeah. No.
I regret that. I regret that. That's a regret I carry around with me. I'm as disappointed in myself as I am A&M and Michigan State, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's all right.
I only loathe them to compensate for my self-loathing.
There have been some compliments on Nada being one of us, obviously, but now you don't even have to worry about that anymore. You're officially on the hook, you know, you're officially taken off the market. So there you go. Games, St. John's at Georgetown, 7 Eastern on Wednesday night. Real quick on this, Patino's, because we responded in real time on Sunday. This became this is the deal. You hire Rick Pitino to St. John's, you're going to get all the attention. Good, bad, you go on losing streaks, they're going to talk about you on national shows. This was topic number two, I believe, on PTI on Tuesday night after PTI didn't have a Monday show. That's how much shelf life this thing had. Now, Pitino sat down with a couple of beat writers, Roger Rubin, Zach Braziller, basically didn't apologize for what he said. We don't need to dive into all of his words in his follow-up. I'll just say this real quick, GP. Pitino got blowback for what he said. Knowing Pitino like we do, I remain entertained and appreciative of a guy that's going to be able to say what's on his mind at a press conference, and then I want more coaches willing to speak their mind. It's not the best idea to continually throw your players under the bus. I get all that. But I don't know, GP. I saw some folks kind of being like, what's Pitino doing? This is going to kill him for transfers. I'm not convinced that's the case in the NIL era, period. And I didn't have like this major issue with him doing this, but I was intrigued by the response. This was more widespread than I anticipated.
Yeah, like people, that's another thing people do all the time is they latch onto one thing and they say, but how's this guy going to recruit? And then he's like, you know, taking a selfie with a 5-star McDonald's All-American. Like, remember, how's Chris Beard going to recruit? And, you know, it'll be fine. You know, it'll be fine. How's Rick Pitino? How is a mother ever going to send their son to play for Rick Pitino? I don't know. They will. You know, they will. And they still will. That was the one, you know, after the Louisville scandal. It was like that was going on at Louisville on Rick Pitino's watch. How would a parent ever send their child to play for Rick Pitino? I don't know. But they will. Just don't worry. It's not as big of a deal as parents of basketball players, you know, in some cases aren't going to care about the stuff that I guess some people with Twitter accounts think they're going to care about. So, you know, it is what it is. Interesting game just because it'll lead to Rick being in front of a microphone again. But keep an eye on Georgetown. I know they're not very good, but, you know, St. John's is very slow laterally.
They are.
And that could be a problem tonight.
I don't have the lateral situation for Georgetown, but I tell you this, I am going to be dialed in on the lateral quickness of Georgetown.
I can't wait to watch Chris Ledlam try to move his feet.
That is where we're at. Someone in the comments is correct. Isaac is saying if this was during the NFL season, it would have made headlines. It would have on the show, but you're right. But that's the nature of there not being football. Hey, that's the deal, man. The comments landed when they landed. It's Patino. And the fact that we are gonna check in and just primary television, St. John's Georgetown, how these dudes look and move inside to side. Just incredible. Let's go real quick because GP's got to get out of here. Duke at Miami is your 7 Eastern ESPN tip. Florida at Alabama. That's kind of intriguing. Bama should win that game. 7 Eastern ESPN 2, but Florida's looking good as of late. We'll see if Alabama can score 100 on another conference opponent. Ole Miss at Mississippi State, 9 Eastern ESPN 2. More of a urgent situation than you might realize for the running rebels of Mississippi there. But that's one to watch on our air, CBS Sports Network. Providence at Xavier. GP, of course, will be in studio again. Providence on the road, bubble team supreme. I think I like Xavier to get that one done, even shorthanded Xavier. And then a really good one again, Mountain West, one after another after another. Colorado State at New Mexico, 10 Eastern. Stay up late. Watch it on CBS Sports Network. GP will be in studio. And then Thursday, only two games to tell you about, in my opinion. SMU at FAU, 7 Eastern, ESPN2. SMU's been playing well as of late. Owls cannot mess around, man. Can't drop that game at home. And then best game of the night. You got to stay up late. 11 Eastern, FS1, not Pac-12 Network. Washington State at Arizona. Keep an eye on it. Tommy Lloyd just got a contract extension. Arizona is broke and tens upon tens of millions of dollars in debt, but they rallied donor money to be able to secure a contract extension for Tommy Lloyd. Not that he was going anywhere. They also have a new AD coming in. They plucked the Missouri athletic director to take over at Arizona later this year. That is your Wednesday, Thursday TV schedule.
If Washington State wins, alone atop the Pac-12 standings, biggest game in Washington State basketball history since, it's been a minute.
Literally, they played in the NCAA tournament in 2008, probably.
Yeah.
Feels that way. Yeah, no, yeah. That's good stuff. Yeah. That's remember, a late tip on Thursday, but depending on how that goes, that might be leading the show on Friday.
That could be what we're leading with on Friday morning, as always. We'll see. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle Legend, Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for watching, listening to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.